demand for football coverage. It's Football Central with Vic Nizar and Jamie Dodd.
What is up? Welcome to Friday, week 8. Get ready to kick off this fun weekend. An interesting set of matchups, especially after last night's game. We got a divisional game, a couple of more this weekend as well. So it's Vic Nizar, Katie Caldwell filling in for Jamie Dodd this week. We'll hear from Satyar Shah as well in just a second as he joins us on Fridays here on Football Central. Katie, what's going on? How did you enjoy that game last night?
You know what? That was exactly what I thought it was going to be. It was a bit of a shootout. They closed it out in a situation that looked all too familiar, but I'm sure we'll get into that. But no, overall, it was a pretty good game.
It started hot, and I think the weather kind of had its impact in the second half with some pretty heavy rains. And it started out like, all right, this is going to be a lot of fun. And then we got 12 points in the second half. So
yeah,
it didn't quite live up to how the first half looked, but we certainly got enough fireworks. Julio Jones showed out and, you know, Todd Gurley got another touchdown despite only putting up 2.6 yards per carry. So kudos to him for making fantasy owners day, because he's been doing that with his league leading touchdowns so far.
He has, but Vic, he didn't look comfortable. Like, and there were quite a few snaps where he's on the sideline and stretching out. And even when he was there, when he would stand up, it looked, there were a few moments I'm going, oh, is he even going to get up? I had a bit of a hard time watching Gurley last night. He looked hurt to me.
Yeah. Look, we know his situation, right? We know.
Oh, of course.
He's got major knee issues, arthritis in his knees, and the concern always was not necessarily the talent, especially in fantasy. The concern always was, hey, you can draft him, you might get a little run at him, and that's fantastic, but come week 7, come week 8, come week 9, come championship weeks when you need your running backs in the playoffs, how is he going to look then? And I think we're seeing some degeneration in his game that it's slowly going to erode, and you're right. He just doesn't look as clean as he did in the first couple of weeks. Or maybe he's just sad from falling into the end zone from last week. I don't know what it is, but he just didn't. You're right. He just didn't look as sharp.
Well, and Vic, that's back-to-back games with pretty big mental errors on his part that absolutely could have cost the game last night. When
right, he runs out of bounds,
that was the moment where I'm thinking, okay, we watched Younghoe Koo miss the extra point. And then the second Gurley runs out of bounds, I go, this is actually going to happen again, isn't it? Except with more time on the clock. He had 3 minutes.
Mm-hmm. No, yeah, absolutely. 650-650, if you want to chime in with your thoughts on week 8, we'll get into some more of the Thursday night review and also set up a couple of games we've got our eye on. This one's for Katie. Katie, this one's from Tire Man Shane. Katie, how much money should I bet on the Browns this weekend? Go Browns.
Goodness me. I don't think I've ever bet money on the Browns, and I don't know if I ever would. I don't think I trust Baker Mayfield nearly as much as other people do. That's a question for Satyar. Why is that one coming to me?
Well, I was just leading up to it. So Sat Shah joining us now. Sat, we'll throw the question to you. You're the resident Browns fan. It is -2.5 last time I checked for the Browns against the Las Vegas Raiders. What are you thinking?
Bet 0.1% of your net worth.
Hey, man, like, Tire Man Shane could be a billionaire. We don't know that.
What if he's a billionaire and then 0.1% you know, is nothing for him, right?
So I suppose 0.1% is relative to everyone.
Exactly. So it's relative to anybody's net worth. So essentially, don't bet too much money on the Cleveland Browns. I hope the Browns win. I have faith the Browns are going to win, and I actually like how they stack up against the Raiders, but it is the Cleveland Browns, Shane. You don't need me to tell you how many times we've lost bets on the Cleveland Browns.
The Church of Pedersen texting in. Katie, how much should I bet against the Browns?
Oh, I love this question. 0.01% of your net worth.
Come on, you guys. have no ambition. Goodness.
That game's quite a toss-up for me, actually. That's one where I probably wouldn't bet on either team, just because I could see it going both ways, and we'll get into that later.
For sure. So what we're doing here on Fridays is Sat will join us on the show, as we saw last week with me and Jamie Dodd, and we've each kind of picked out a handful of games to say, these are the interesting ones this weekend. Let's, you know, go through them with a fine-tooth comb And we are going to focus on the Cleveland Browns game. We are going to focus on the Seahawks game. So we'll get to all of those. But, Sad, I did want to get your thoughts on Thursday night football, kind of a weird one considering how it started so hot. And then the Panthers never really got going. They couldn't really get the ball to guys like DJ Moore and Robbie Anderson enough.
The Lions are fine enough as it is when Teddy Bridgewater is at his best, let alone when he's probably concussed playing in the second half of that game, right? And he just wasn't even what he's used to being. But I do think that game, because it was Thursday, it had the loopy Thursday weird vibe to it. And when that kind of happens, all bets are off. Like even the Falcons towards the end of that game, well, they stopped scoring in the fourth quarter. They're up by 8, and they allow the Panthers to almost come back and at least score a touchdown, and they didn't convert on their chance, especially down late, but the door was wide open for the Falcons. So if the Falcons win this game, now they're 2-6 on the season. I feel bad for the Panthers because, you know, whatever slim hopes they had of being in the playoff picture to me are completely done losing this game. But it's another red flag game from the Falcons, really, when you look at it. As much as they won that game, they were never really in control of that game.
The one guy, I want to get you guys' opinions on this, your thoughts. The one guy that, you know, piqued my interest through that game, he only touched the ball 7 times, but he looked phenomenal every time he touched it. It was Curtis Samuel. He gets a touchdown by the ground. He gets a touchdown through the air. He put up a big day. Is this something to keep an eye on? It's a player that a lot of people have had stock in, but it hasn't really come off at any point as much as the hype has been around him.
Well, Bick, yesterday we spent the whole day talking about Robbie Anderson and DJ Moore. I don't think we brought up Curtis Samuel once.
Yeah.
And they talked about it on the broadcast. They called him a Swiss Army knife, and that's exactly what he was. He was playing all over the field. I've never seen his versatility quite like I had last night. Maybe it was there and I just hadn't noticed it. But he was just everywhere, and it was working. He was making plays.
The question I have with Curtis Samuel really is, does he have a big game in him? Does he have big game potential? Because just look at how his season has gone. Yeah, he'll get, you know, 4 or 5 receptions in some games, and he'll have a few attempts. But, you know, the most yardage he's had receiving yards he's had in a game this year is 51. The most rushing yards he's had in a game this season is 28. He is like a poor man's version of not – and I'm not even talking about a guy like Marshall Faulk or anything like that. Like, to me, he's a Danny Woodhead type or even below of that, like more of a receiver type of that regard. So – I don't think Curtis
Samuel. Percy Harvin.
Yeah, Percy Harvin, but not even Percy.
Torque down. Yeah.
Torque down. Like, you know, so maybe Sproles without being as dynamic, that's the type of player he could be, but I don't know, man. Like, he had a decent game. He has some moments in him, but he's never going to be that breakout player some had guessed he would be. And I liked him too coming out of the draft, and I had some stock in him. But it's more like he's a nice complimentary player that's versatile for you, but that's pretty much the extent of it.
650. Atlanta's a throwing team. Gurley, not a good fit in their system. 10 to 15 carries is not enough for a pure running back. I agree that, you know, them featuring Todd Gurley as much as they do, and Julio Jones was running, you know, rampant all over that field. I know he finishes with 7 and 137, but the texture's right. Atlanta needs to focus as much as they can at throwing the football. Like, 36 rushes is whatever they're winning. I get it. And the weather is what it was. But when this team is at its best, it's finding Hayden Hurst. It's finding Calvin Ridley. It's finding Russell Gage. It's finding Julio Jones. That's when they're at their best. And, you know, just seeing these Todd Gurley rushes for 2.6 yards took its toll on me yesterday. And like his high watermark with 11 yards. I'm done with the Todd Gurley experiment, basically, is what I'm getting. Especially when you're 2-6. Have some fun now in your season. Goodness me. Okay, let's get to week 8. Keep your texts coming in. If you've got some thoughts on some games, we'll try to share them. But we want to focus on these main 4 games, starting with the Seattle Seahawks and San Francisco 49ers. It's not the rivalry of the 2013-2014 peak Harbaugh-Carroll 49ers and Seahawks, but it's still a very good rivalry, and especially when these teams are firing on all cylinders. Now, health notwithstanding for both teams in this scenario, more so for the 49ers, but both teams very strong so far this year. I think you could make an argument that, you know, the entire NFC West should be top 14 teams, basically.
I think you're totally right, Bick. And this game's going to be interesting on Sunday. We spent all week talking about talent versus system and what you would rather have in a team. And while I fundamentally believe that it's more important to have talent, Kyle Shanahan just, he continues to be that big glaring asterisk in that. Like, their scheme is just so incredibly sound that we saw it last game where you've got your third string running back, Jeff Wilson, running for 100 plus yards, and then he goes down and you have Jamichael Hasty come in and he looks great. It just, with them, it seems like no matter who's in there, Shanahan finds a way to maximize them so they're not just having to lean on a guy like George Kittle. So we haven't seen them at full power, but they are starting to get healthier, and I do worry about that for the Seahawks.
Katie, you're so right about Kyle Shanahan, and the most impressive coaching job he's done so far is this season with the amount of injuries he's had. And you look at Jimmy Garoppolo being as flawed as he is. You look at that team going through what they've gone through. And instead of the wheels kind of falling off, and especially coming off a year where you make a deep push and you come so close to winning the Super Bowl, but you do ultimately lose, it's really easy to have that malaise the next season. And when things kind of start spiraling, it just goes out of control. The next thing you know, you're 1-5 on the season, or and then you become 2-5, and you're done. You just can't recover from that point. But now they're 4-3, and you look at how well they've played the last couple of games. That's why the line is only 3 for Seattle. It's a field goal. And Carlos Dunlap, if he does, if I haven't heard if he is playing.
I believe because of COVID protocols, he's out till next week.
So he's out to next week, right? That's what I was assuming. So you're not really going to get that push to maybe give Seattle a bit extra on the defense to get in Jimmy Garoppolo's grill. But I still like Seattle in this game. But Bick, does this not have a Seahawks 1-point game, final possession of the game feel to it?
Look, I was going to start it all off, but I'm glad you set me up for it. But yeah, of course, as much as we're talking about the Seahawks, this is a rivalry game and they can explode. And the offense, I'm not concerned about the offense. Russell Wilson had a bad game, but you bet on things that are sticky, right? And his whole career has not been that one game. I'm more than confident he'll be fine, but you know, it's going to find a way to just be a close game. Now, whether that's by philosophy, you know, we know Kyle Shanahan, what he's going to do. It's going to be run the ball, you know, win on the edges, find creases to get Jamichael Hasty into space and let him run. Jerick McKinnon, maybe he'll feature a bit more, but it's getting speed guys into alleys and into lanes that they can take advantage of. Now, what do the Seahawks do? If they do this whole let Russ cook thing, they can play at a tempo that is superior to the 49ers. And do you force the game into Jimmy Garoppolo's hands? That to me is the interesting part.
Well, and that's where I wish that we were having this conversation going into a game with the Niners next week, where they'll probably have Jamal Adams back, and then you just have those pieces coming in all together on the defense. So it's going to be interesting. I still can't quite get a read on this one. The Seahawks, I didn't realize this until I was looking it up today. They've lost 4 straight divisional games dating back to last December when they beat the 49ers last November. So, but I think you're right, Bick. I like Russ coming off a loss, and he took a lot of ownership for that loss. So I think they will be cooking. But as we've talked about with every game, I still just worry about their defense so much.
So, what I like to do is, you know, anytime we're looking at a game, what to you is, or what to me is the most interesting side of the ball? Like, when one team is on offense, or which team is it to you in this particular game that is most interesting when they have the ball?
It's Seattle Seahawks. Right, like I think the right now, to me, the most interesting part is when Russ has the ball and the offense is just going strictly through him. And you're right about the tempo part, because what is it you don't want to see from the opposition? If I'm the 49ers, the last thing you want is a tempo to be super high for the Seattle Seahawks, right? Like, because if you do that, you're just not going to be able to keep up with Russ. And as much as the 49ers can run the ball really well to the point that you made, they're not going to get into a shootout and probably win with Jimmy Garoppolo against the Seahawks if the tempo's high.
Mm-hmm. Right? Yeah, they want to break it down to 8-9 yard rushes, right? And matriculate the ball down the field.
Right. Yeah, it goes back to the old game plan. It's what the Hawks would have wanted to do in the past, which would have been to control the game clock, limit the amount of plays essentially that get played in the game, and find a way to win in the fourth quarter, right? Like in the last possession. That's probably what the 49ers want to do against the Seahawks, whereas the Hawks probably want to just run them off the field.
If I'm looking at this as far as like what side of the ball impacts the game from for winning, I think this game is won and lost when the 49ers have the ball. It's going to matter if the Seahawks can tackle. And I know that's a dumb thing to say. It seems so rudimentary, but getting Brandon Ayuk into space, getting Deebo Samuel into space, how quickly can the Seahawks rally to the ball and shut down yards after the catch opportunities? Because I'm not concerned about Jimmy Garoppolo going downfield. If you leave that open for him and he makes a pass, okay, congratulations, that's an anomaly. But generally speaking, this team relies on yards after the catch. And if you can tackle cleanly, if you can close down areas where those guys can't get into space, that's an opportunity where you got to close that down and force this team into long drives. As much as they want to do it, they want to do it with positive yardage. But if you can just keep slowing that down and force this team into situations where Garoppolo has to win, that's where it's won and lost.
So how are you guys looking at how the Seahawks are approaching offense in this game? Obviously, they only have DJ Dallas, but how much are they actually going to be running the ball against San Francisco's defense? Or are they just going to be tossing it basically the entire time? Like, what are your guys' thoughts on this?
And I have tossed and turned about this.
Yeah, me too.
and we saw it today. I think Travis Homer is going to be a game time decision, and Carlos Hyde's likely out. Just some thoughts from Pete Carroll when he was doing a radio interview in Seattle. But I think it's more of a function of usage, not necessarily of any success. Right. I think you might see 23, 24, 25 carries, but it's just for a matter of keeping the 49ers honest. If the Seahawks clip 70 yards rushing this weekend from the running backs, I'll be impressed.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think the attempts are going to be in that 20 range because you have to, especially with the play action. You have no choice. Yeah. And if you don't run the ball at all, they're just going to stack against the pass.
As much as I love watching Russ cook, any team that decides like, hey, we're going to throw 85% of the snaps, you can't be one-dimensional in the NFL. It's too difficult.
You can't be. And besides, when you do pass the ball efficiently, and especially if they get going quickly, and if they kind of do the hurry up offense, then it's going to allow the running game to actually gain some yardage. I wonder the pace the Seahawks will try to play at, because if you keep the pace high, then you might be able to get those running backs, even if it is DJ Dallas, against some tired defenders. And if you do that, maybe that allows the yardage to go up. So I think the key to the Seahawks, if they are going to run the ball 20 times, is to keep the pace of the offense really high.
I did misspeak earlier, as one of our texters did chime in. Unfortunately, Deebo Samuel is hurt. Yes, I did forget that Deebo's out, so that's one less offensive weapon, at least in open field, that the 49 or the Seahawks don't have to worry about. But they still got plenty of weapons. It's still Kendrick Bourne. It's still Jerick McKinnon, JaMychal Hasty. Look, I've spoken a lot about how much I like JaMychal Hasty. So it's still guys who can create big plays. Now, one thing that kind of fascinates me about how the Seahawks have built their defense in relation to this particular game, it's they got singular guys for these types of games. Like Jordan Brooks, we can talk about a first-round pick is too high for a linebacker. He has tremendous sideline-to-sideline speed, and we saw it last week feature up a bit. But like, this is a reason that you go get Jordan Brooks. This is a reason you go get Jamal Adams. Mm-hmm. These types of games. The two teams that like to go work the entire span of the sideline to sideline, right? And force you to cover every blade of glass laterally. Well, when you have speed on defense, this is where the value of those types of players are supposed to show up. You think about the 49ers, you think about the Rams, how they like to use jet sweep, jet motion, pre-snap to try to change the alignment of the defense a little bit. If you can try to stay in your alignment and win with speed, you need players like Brooks and Adams. Now, Adams also going to be a game time decision. It's going to be tight to see if he gets in, but this is a game where this is the reason you go get Jordan Brooks, and hopefully he gets his opportunity to shine.
Well, and I was in the same camp as many of us where I was very critical of that pick. I didn't necessarily understand it. And he did have a super frustrating start and he's had injury issues, but he's one that I've had circled that I'm going to be watching out for him on Sunday because I've started to see flashes where, like you said, Bick, like I get it. I'm starting to get why that's where they went.
It makes a lot of sense as far as the speed aspect goes, because every time you see Cordy Barton play in that spot, it's like, You said this numerous times, Bick, especially on Sundays when we watch the games every once in a while, like on Zoom calls, it'd be like Cordy Barton knows what to do and where to go, but he thinks he's athletic enough to get there. And he's just not athletic enough to get there, right? So he tries really hard and he thinks the right way, but he's got to find a different way to be successful. Jordan Brooks is going to be able to fill those gaps a lot quicker. And if he does that and he doesn't play with something bothering him at all, that should help the Seahawks out a lot in that running game against the running game.
Brooks just plays with more physicality than Cordy Barton.
Yeah.
And blockers dominate Cordy Barton. He doesn't get off blocks as well. Brooks evades and, you know, stands tall two blocks and is able to shed and make plays. So that's an interesting one. One other guy I want to highlight actually here. It's going to be interesting because we saw last week, the Cardinals and the Seahawks, DK Metcalf got shadowed by Patrick Peterson. And now there's a size, I don't want to say mismatch, but, you know, Patrick Peterson physically matches DK Metcalf to some degree. The 49ers don't really have that. And I love Jason Verrett, one of my favorite players, one of my favorite corners to play in the NFL in the last 10 years. He's finally healthy. He's showing up that, like, this is the guy he always should have been. His feet are so smooth. He's like the prototypical cornerback that you should watch his feet. Like, that's teaching tape. Mm-hmm. But I can't imagine you throw him up against DK Metcalf this week.
I have a hard time putting anyone against DK Metcalf. Mm-hmm. Like, we've seen what he's done on offense the last 2 year and a half. Now we've seen what he's doing on defense. He's so big, but he's so fast. And we've talked about him again and again, but it's like, how can you find the right words to even describe this beast of a human being? But yeah, if I'm a cornerback, I just don't know anyone that I feel confident. Like, even I look back at Stephon Gilmore, even that was just such a fun matchup. And look how amazing Gilmore is as a player. So I'm hesitant to be putting anyone against DK just because he's that much of a beast. And I was only half kidding earlier in the week when I said, maybe he should start playing on defense. Yeah. Let's get him on every single snap of the game.
You know, Katie, you're right. There's nobody on that team that's going to be able to match up against DK Metcalf. And it's too bad Richard Sherman is injured and he's not around. Because, okay, Richard Sherman's not the same guy he was in the past. And, hey, maybe this injury, too, he'll maybe never be even what he was last season, for instance. But he has the size, he has some physicality, and he has the experience. He would have been somebody that maybe, just maybe, could find a way to limit DK Metcalf. But I kind of feel robbed that we don't get that matchup.
I love how you said limit, because it's totally true. You can't beat him. You can only hope to contain him.
It's Bick Nizar, Katie Caldwell, and Satir Shah joining us today to break down Week 8. We'll get to three more games here on the other side after a big feature there on the Seahawks 49ers. Actually, guys, really quickly, who wins the game?
Oh, Sat, you go first. I've been flip-flopping all day.
I got the Hawks, and they won't cover 3 points, though. So I got the 49ers to cover, but the Hawks win the game.
The only strong prediction I have is that Bick will be tweeting out his regular tweet of every Seahawks game is different, and every Seahawks game is the same.
That's truth.
Yeah, that bet isn't even offered, right? Like, it's a certainty, of course. I only do it because every game is weird as hell.
It's amazing. I think the Seahawks will take it, but yeah, I think it's going to be down to the last drive and it's going to be really dramatic, but Russ is going to cook.
I will bet on the better quarterback. And so the Seahawks will probably win a close one again, and it'll be excruciating, but it will certainly be fun. We'll get to the other games coming up here on Football Central, the home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
Welcome back to Football Central with Bick Nizar and Jamie Dodd.
Sportsnet 650, home of the Canucks. Bick Nizar, Katie Caldwell filling in this week for Jamie Dodd. I should also mention this week, and actually heading until Monday, November 2nd, at 9:30. The Canucks for Kids Fund, in partnership with the Canucks Autism Network, is excited to announce the 50-50 draw, where the jackpot is the super $1 million, with the guaranteed minimum prize of $500,000. Proceeds go on to replace the Canucks Autism Network fundraising events that, of course, were canceled or postponed due to the COVID pandemic. Some that you may have participated in, like the Canucks Autism Network Pro-Am, the Fishing for Kids Tournament, and the HM Commercial Ride for Autism. So you can still get involved with this $1 million 50-50. Log on. Tickets are on sale at Canucks.com/online5050. And you got till Monday, November 2nd at 9:30 at night to purchase your ticket. Let's get to the rest of Week 8 action. Katie Caldwell and Sat Shaw joining me, Vic Nazar, here on Football Central. It's kind of an interesting week. It is kind of hard to pick some winners this week, but there are three standout games, guys, and it starts with a huge divisional matchup. One that is, I feel like for the fans of the NFL that are, 20, 30 and under, you kind of grew up watching these battles with Polamalu and Ed Reed, and they kind of dominated the late 2000s. It's Baltimore versus the Pittsburgh Steelers.
This is the one that I've had circled on my calendar since before the season started. And now looking at how these teams have been playing, I could not be more excited. And guys, this game comes down to one guy for me, and that's Lamar Jackson. He, with the nature of both defenses in this game, they can both dial up creative blitzes at an unbelievable rate. He has to be sensational. He has to get outside of the pocket. I think that's the key. And he has to be throwing high. Their running game should be the foundation of their attack. But against the Steelers defense, you just have to make that adjustment. To me, it just has to be Lamar.
Sat, where are you at with Lamar? Because I think, he's MVP. Everyone just showered him with praise. And rightfully so. He was unbelievable last year. But if you just look at total yards right now, he's pretty far down there. And we thought, heading into the season, it was like, all right, it's Lamar Jackson's division now here for the foreseeable future. But Joe Burrow's shown up reasonably well. Ben Roethlisberger's playing to his age and doing the right thing of kind of being more of a point guard. And Baker, look, he's had his up and downs, but look, his record is what it is this season, and he's shown some big performances, including last week. It feels like that gap isn't as big as we might think it is.
Well, it was what Lamar had last year was a career season. Lamar may never have a season as good as last year's. He won the MVP, and look at what he did. It was a historical season, and that may never get duplicated to that degree again. And if that's the case, then it's not fair to hold Lamar to that standard. He's not going to play at that level every single year. But I do think the one thing that is becoming very evident is if you allow Lamar to be a pure passer, that's your best way to winning a football game. And that's what the opposition has tried to do a lot against them. And it's not like they're having a ton of success because, the Ravens are winning games. They're still one of the top teams in the AFC. But it's not the same ceiling if that offense can't find a way to evolve. What's the truth about every single offense in the NFL? Every year, you have to add a new wrinkle. You have to evolve and get a bit better, do a little bit something different to take that next step. What are the Ravens doing different this season? Because what they're trying to do differently isn't working, and that's trying to pass the ball more in certain situations. And teams are stacking against the run. Even Ingram hasn't gotten loose. You're getting to the point now where J.K. Dobbins is probably going to just be given the reins because Ingram isn't really doing a whole hell of a lot when he does have the ball. But this offense just has not evolved from where it was last year. If anything, it has regressed.
Well, how much do you guys think that has to do with who they've been playing so far? Because I'm looking at the game against the Texans, against Washington, against the Eagles. Typically, Lamar is the guy that's running outside the pocket and making those deep throws, but that was in a situation with against those defenses. You don't really have to be the guy. So, this is the first really intense defense that I'm, in my opinion anyways, that he's up against. Do you think maybe they've just been protecting Lamar a bit just because he is so mobile and they're worried about him getting hurt? Or, what are you guys' thoughts on that?
Well, against Cincinnati, you could make that case because he had that knee injury and only rushed two times in that game. But that offense can run hot and cold. Like if you just go through their his yards per completion. It's, you know, look, there's some games where it's fire. It's over 8 yards a game. It's 11 yards a completion versus Cleveland, 9.2 versus Washington. But then there's other games where it's sub five. And that's for an offense that wants to be dynamic. And look, I've got no questions about Lamar's ability as a thrower. I got no questions. It just, he'll figure it out over time. But is this a function of, you know, a young player, or is this a function of not enough talent on the team as far as from the pass catching options?
There is definitely that aspect of it, from not having those next level options, because, you know, Marquise Brown, when he's healthy and playing, he's good, but hasn't really popped this year. They don't really have a top end receiver. And isn't that kind of the story of the Ravens forever, where they've had some good players on offense, they've had a really good running game, they've had quarterbacks who are competent, but never that receiver that's going to really make a difference. And I feel that for Lamar to be the best version of himself, you need better weapons for him, because he can get them the ball when they're open, but he's not going to throw guys open. And if you're expecting Lamar to throw guys open, well, you're probably looking at misusing him.
I want to kind of switch gears to Pittsburgh's offense here, because Big Ben, he started well. He had some two rough quarters against the Titans there, but he's just got such a deep group of pass catchers. When I watch a Steelers game, I'm always kind of wondering, like, who's breaking out today? Is it going to be Juju? Are we going to Chase Claypool? Deontay Johnson's had a big game, and it seems like Big Ben hasn't had to be spectacular, but he's good at getting the ball out quickly. How are you looking at these guys' offense? Because Baltimore's defense, man, they look so good. And then we add Yannick Ngakoue. And I want to say this before you guys answer. In three career games against Big Ben, he has two sacks, five QB hits, and one forced fumble that was returned for a touchdown. Like, I am just so pumped on Ngakoue, and he's beside Calais Campbell. I'm loving that defense, and I'm just not sure how that's going to go against Big Ben. This is such a toss-up for me.
Well, Sat, I know you're a big Deontay Johnson guy, so I'll let you go off here on him.
Well, see, the thing with Deontay Johnson is, man, like, the kid is so dynamic. He's such a smart route runner as well, and he gives that receiving core a bit of a different look. Juju's really good, and Juju is amazing, but Deontay is a bit different. And when you have both those guys on the field going, it creates different mismatches. And Deontay finds ways to get open. He finds separation. So all you need Big Ben to do is step back, you know, drop back and just sling the ball the way he can. And it's, we talked to Mark Schofield about this. I heard another analyst, who I forget who it was, likened Ben Roethlisberger to playing like a point guard. And when you have guys, you have guards, for instance, who are as fast as dynamic, that get out on the floor, like a Deontay Johnson, and a guy just throwing the ball up the court, that's what you're kind of seeing. That's the way they're playing offense on football. And that offensive line has been solid. And the game plan the Steelers have had, man, listen, I hate giving the Steelers a lot of love here, but they're a really good football team. They're a well-coached football team. They have a plan and they execute their plan. And right now, to me, they look like the most dangerous team in the AFC.
I didn't want to cut you off there, but people are not talking nearly enough about Mike Tomlin and the coaching job that he's doing this season specifically. You brought up the coaching, Sat, but Tomlin is just blowing me away every week.
Well, it's Tomlin, and I think, like, a couple of years ago, this defense just wasn't as slick. It wasn't as sharp, and we've seen from Pittsburgh that, you know, just historically, we expect just, you know, the steel curtain and all that sort of stuff. And, you know, whether it's transitioning from Dick LeBeau from way back when, and it just wasn't obviously working out. And what Keith Butler has done is just improved it a little by little. And to be honest, like, there were moments even in his tenure where it's like, I don't know if you're the guy that's going to be the one to take this defense to the promised land. But the inclusion of Devin Bush, who's obviously out, the inclusion of Minkah Fitzpatrick has kind of changed that defense a little bit. And some of the talent even still on that defense, I look at, and, you know, Sata, you know, I'm looking at Joe Hayden right now. Mm-hmm. Like, how are you still in the league, and how are you still playing viable snaps? But they've managed to make it work.
And that's the big thing about a guy like Joe Hayden. In Cleveland at the end of it, and especially the way they play defense, a lot of pressure was on Joe Hayden. He wasn't going to be able to play on an island and stop anybody. But if you put Joe Hayden in a position where he can be part of a group and give you just, you know, league average play, that's solid. I think sometimes we overlook the importance of having league average players, right? And you see that throughout the season when guys go down and you see the second string guys come in, third string guys come in, and a guy off the practice squad comes in. And those guys just get absolutely owned on the field. So having somebody who can at least hold his own and give you just an even playing field, to me, that's value. And they've just gotten better at the margins. But the real key to their defense is having guys like TJ Watt, having Stephon Tuitt, you know, having Cam Hayward. That front is an absolute beast. But I do wonder what happens, though, with that defense now when you don't have Devin Bush. Because, Vic, how often do we talk about that defense with the way they like to play? And Ryan Shazier was such a big part of it. They need that type of linebacker. But have they created enough strength around that position that they can get away with it?
It didn't really show itself out in the first half against Tennessee, but Tennessee started to move the ball late. It's something I'm going to keep an eye on here. I don't know if the Ravens are set up specifically to try to take advantage of that matchup loss, but it's something to keep an eye on moving forward. I do like Vince Williams, but I don't know if he's that type of guy. And obviously TJ Watt's more of an outside guy. It's something that's just I want to keep an eye on moving forward. I don't know if this is the game that it gets taken advantage of. You guys got a pick on this game?
Oh, this is the one I've gone back and forth so many times. I think I'm going to go Ravens.
I'll go Steelers. I mean, I'm going to Steelers just to cover the line. I'll think they'll win the game as well. I mean, the fact that the Ravens are getting, 4.5 as a home team against the Steelers?
4 is the last I looked, yeah.
4? Okay, so I'm betting I'm getting the Steelers to cover. And as far as who wins the game, I think the Steelers will also win.
I think it's going to be a gross, fun Baltimore Pittsburgh game.
Yeah.
I think
it's gonna be so tough. Oh my god.
Yeah, 20-17, and I'll just flip a coin right now, and like there you go. It's Baltimore. I'm not basing on any analysis. I just flip a coin. I'll take Baltimore for no reason. It's gonna be a tight one. We'll get to this one here. Cleveland at the Raiders. Or sorry, the Raiders at Cleveland. It's 2.5, but I feel like Sats thinks it should be like a touchdown or something like that. Sats, what are your initial thoughts when you see this game?
Well, I like the Browns right now to win at home against the Raiders. The Raiders are also, I mean, it's not quite going cross country, but you are traveling from the West all the way to Cleveland. Those are always tough games to go out and play, not quite coast to coast, but still, I like that aspect of it for Cleveland. And I don't think Cleveland is better without Odell, but I do think not having Odell and the Browns not looking to force the ball to him consistently allows Baker to just go for the open man. Sometimes Baker got completely just flummoxed by trying to get Odell the ball or trying to get Jarvis the ball. Now he can just go to the open man and not kind of feel that pressure. And you see a guy like Rashard Higgins, who in his rookie season with Baker, when Baker was a rookie with Rashard Higgins, those guys clicked really well. Under Freddie Kitchens, it all fell apart, and Higgins was obviously down the depth chart when you have Odell and Jarvis healthy. But you see that chemistry come back again. That is something to keep an eye on. And Donovan Peoples-Jones, dude, and Katie, man, like I like this kid a lot coming out of the draft, and there wasn't a ton of tape on him. He is a bit of a mercurial talent. But he is extremely athletic, and he is extremely impressive when he gets into open space. So I look at Cleveland being able to continue to move in the ball down the field and using their variety of weapons. And if the play calling continues and you have the running game going with Kareem Hunt and Nick Chubb's not quite healthy, especially at home, I really like this matchup for the Browns. I don't think losing Odell against the Raiders is going to hold them back too much.
Vic Nizar, Sat Shaw, Katie Caldwell here on Football Central. Katie, where is this game won or lost?
This one, it's hard to say because the Browns defense is so, so interesting to me. I feel like as a unit, they're still figuring it out. But then there are a few guys that when I watch their games, they really, really stand out to me. Myles Garrett is the obvious one. He has more sacks than the Raiders defense as a whole. Ronnie Harrison has been impressing me. I think he had the pick six against the Colts. And Denzel Ward, I feel like they've got a few key pieces that once they put it together, they'll be so, so good. But then both of these teams are a unique situation where you don't really know which version you're going to get. Like we saw the Raiders, they've been such a hard team to figure out as well. They put up a 40 burger on the Chiefs, but then they can't, it's just, they're so confusing. Derek Carr has been playing a lot more aggressive. I can't really pick out where. I think it's going to be when the Raiders have the ball. I think that's where the game is going to be decided, but there's just so much inconsistency, but it's going to make for a fun game. Sorry, Sat, if I'm not a Browns fan.
I'm with you there. I think this game is won and lost when the Raiders have the ball, because it's not a question of talent for when mm-hmm. the Browns, for what the Browns have on defense. It's just, it's not quite gelling together. Is that fair, Sat?
Oh, it's more than fair. And it's not, I don't even think it's necessarily just, them not gelling together. I think Joe Woods deserves some criticism to this point, and the way he's trying to approach that defense, there hasn't really been too much creativity with how they're trying to rush, trying to get to the quarterback. They're essentially relying on Myles Garrett to wreak havoc at all times, and they're thinking, we'll just drop back in coverage and it'll be fine. Myles Garrett is really, really good. But how many times, Bick, have we seen extremely good defensive players, the best defensive players in the league, be on teams that just don't go anywhere? Did the Raiders not remember what it was like with Khalil Mack before they were any good? So that's right. So my concern here is Joe Woods is overly reliant on Myles Garrett doing things every single mm-hmm. snap, and they're not doing enough away from him to stop the opposition. And it is, to this point, I've been very unimpressed by Joe Woods and how little he's gotten out of the stars on that defense. There's no reason why the Browns defense should be one of the worst in the league so far this season, based on the personnel they have.
I'm less concerned when the Browns have the ball, just because I feel like I've seen enough from the Raiders defense that it's like, okay, mm-hmm. they haven't figured out enough of their problems. It's they're not consistent enough with the overall pass rush. You can manipulate them at the second level. So I kind of feel like the Browns will have success putting up points versus this Raiders defense. And it's a question of, can Derek Carr be willing to stand in the pocket long enough to try to generate some big plays that should be there against the Browns. But the Browns, as we know, have talent. It's a matter of putting it all together. I'm picking a winner here. We already know who Sat's picking, but I'm actually with Sat this week. I'm taking the Browns.
Okay, I'm going to pick Raiders just because I like to be different. And I like what their offense did. They're embracing their offensive team status, and I'm looking for them to keep doing that.
One final game for us to look at here. It is the Indianapolis Colts on the road against the Detroit Lions. Very sneakily, it's we've talked about these two teams a lot, Katie, this week about, we don't necessarily buy into their records and all that sort of stuff, but in regards to the Colts, but look, the record is what they are. You just try to go 1-0 every week and figure it out. They are sitting there at 4-2. Detroit's at 3-3. This is an interesting spot for Detroit, because they could go 3-4 and then look at the schedule coming up. But if they get this win here, it could really be the start of the snowball kind of going down the hill and picking up momentum in the back end of the year.
Well, that's the thing. They're both kind of just middling teams. And I think this is going to give us a better idea of where each team is at. Like, we talked about the game last night heading into it. We're not going to learn anything with that. We know what those teams are. We know where they're heading. But this one, I can't quite figure it out. Like, that was the win the Lions needed. Stafford's been spreading out the ball. I think Kenny Golladay is one of the more underrated receivers in the league. And I know we talk about him, but we don't talk about him as being one of the best. And I think he's one of the best deep ball threats in the league. But this is one of those teams where you find out, because I don't think they've faced a defense quite like the Colts yet.
That Golladay conversation is really interesting, because I look at him and I think, okay, that's a real number one receiver. Now, it's a low-end number one receiver, but like he knows how to do all the things at different levels of the field, and he's got that prototypical size. Whereas a guy we were just talking about, like Juju Schuster, I don't know if he's like a real number one receiver, but he's a high end number two. But just the perception of those two guys feels like it's inverted.
And that's usually what happens, right? It's the perception that shades how the public views a guy, but it's more about what are you doing on the field and how different it looks, right? And I'm completely with you. I mean, I joke around about Kenny Golladay because he doesn't really get a lot of separation, but he just makes catches. He's a great receiver. He does get some separation, but he's not incredibly dynamic. So when you look at him, you're like, He doesn't, he, if you just look at it purely from how he runs and how he makes his catches, you're like, that doesn't quite look like a number one receiver. But look at how he just gets stuff
done. It's like Keenan Allen, right?
And just get it done. I don't care how you do it. Just get it done. And that's what he does. So I'm completely there with you with Kenny Golladay. That defense the Colts have will be very interesting on the road against Kenny Golladay and how they're going to try to defend them. If they can slow those guys down, I really like how Indy can propel themselves and go to that next level here as a 5-2 team that is slowly figuring out how to make the best use out of Phillip Rivers. I love Frank Reich. I do. I love Frank Reich and what he's doing. But how much can you get out of Phillip Rivers at this point? So I think this is critical for them to win this game, to go to 5-2 on the season, because they go down 4-3. I just have a hard time seeing Phillip Rivers having enough to find an extra win or two down the road if they don't win games like this.
Sat, I'm totally with you that I think Frank Reich is one of the more brilliant minds in the NFL. But Phillip Rivers, man, like, he loves doing two things, and that's throwing picks and having kids, because he is stayed completely on brand. This whole time heading into the season, and Bick, we had talked about this so many times, where I'm thinking, okay, once he is plunked into a different system where you have a way better offensive line, their defense is amazing, and then they stepped up this year with DeForest Buckner. Xavier Rhodes is playing way better than we thought he would. But spoiler alert, it's the same old Phillip Rivers.
Yeah, it's kind of weird that situation hasn't improved his circumstances. It's still close games. It's still dramatic. It would be like if Jameis Winston started starting for the Saints, right? We would say, okay, is this going to be improvement, or is this going to be the quarterback kind of having his identity on the team? That's exactly what translated here with Phillip Rivers into Indianapolis. It's a better organization.
He is
precisely, and all that late game heroics and drama and, you know, over managing at the line of scrimmage, that's all happened here in Indianapolis when you're set up to succeed more so than ever with Frank Reich and this offense. Now, look, they have some questions that need to be raised of who their weapons are, right? Like, it's Zach Pascal right now, and T.Y. Hilton hasn't shown up really at all. So that's all valid, and what are they making? But this offensive line, and I know Ryan Kelly's might be out this week, but this offensive line is among the premier in the NFL, and it just hasn't improved for Phillip Rivers enough that it raises enough concerns for me to say maybe there's a ceiling that this team won't reach this year because of Phillip Rivers. Really quickly, a pick on the game, guys?
Colts by 4.
Yeah, I got the Colts to cover on the road.
I will take the Detroit Lions to win this game.
Yeah,
somehow they're an underdog in this game, but I am most surprised with that. But yeah, Lions win. We'll get into it much more on the program. I'll be doing Big 6 as well. Plus, we'll have a lot of great coverage with Sat, Walks, and myself coming up later today at 4 o'clock. But on the way, reach deep. Katie, Sat, thank you very much. And a big round of applause for Katie for filling in all this week here on Football Central. I'll be back next Monday. We'll see you then. Take care.